Part 4. Prosperity for All. Chapter 9. The Strategy of Economic Development. The 21st century can be a century of shared prosperity, a great convergence, as we termed it earlier. The global economy can be marked by a narrowing of the income gap between rich and poor countries, not because of a decline in incomes in the richer societies, but because of a rapid catch-up by the poor. Shared prosperity would not only mean the end of massive and unnecessary suffering among those who are now trapped in extreme poverty, but would also mean a safer and more democratic world as well, with rising incomes underpinning political stability and increasingly open societies. Moreover, resentment along class and ethnic lines would diminish if all income groups and cultures had the chance to share in a growing global economy. It is when one region or group is excluded that hatred and unrest are likely to follow. The fundamental reason for believing that prosperity can spread to all corners of the world is that the very science and technology that underpin prosperity in the rich world are potentially available to the rest of the world as well. If the rich countries are rich because they have adopted these improved technologies, power generation, medicine, transport, construction, and much more, the same improved technologies can also be adopted in today's impoverished countries. As we noted earlier, technology has the wonderful property of being non-rival. Each person, business, or country can adopt the technology without limiting the ability of others to adopt the technology as well. Unlike a given number of barrels of oil, which are available either for you or for me, but not both, the fruits of scientific advancement, such as the human genome or the Internet, are available for any and all, without the need to ration the knowledge. Moreover, for many advanced technologies, the Internet, computer operating systems, vaccinations, insecticide-treated bed nets, mobile phones, the benefits are greater the more that others are using the technology. Such technologies are often called network technologies, and the benefits of mass use are called network externalities. Fittingly, we live in a networked age, where the advent of such technologies has soared. Note that the focus on technological improvements is starkly different from the failed Marxist notion that the rich are rich because they successfully exploit the poor. If the rich get rich only because the poor get exploited, then world income would be roughly constant, and all of the economic action would be about the distribution of a given level of economic output. That, indeed, is what Marx had in mind. But world output is not constant, precisely because technological improvements allow the world to get a lot more economic value out of a given level of inputs. We've already seen how the world average income per person rose from around $600 in 1820 to around $6,000 in 1998. An increase of 10 times. Tapping into advanced technology. Even though the knowledge that underpins prosperity is potentially available to all, not all parts of the world are rich. Indeed, far from it. While the world's average per capita income has increased by roughly 10 times since 1820, some parts of the world have had much larger increases than 10 times, and others much smaller. The actual increase in per capita income between 1820 and 1998, stated as a multiple of the 1820 level, is shown for the major regions of the world. One of the core challenges of the science of economic development is to understand these regional differences. Another is to understand how to unlock faster economic growth in the laggard regions. Why did Africa's income per person rise by a mere 3.5 times between 1820 and 1998, while the United States enjoyed a 22-fold increase? Can Africa now narrow the gap through faster economic development? What about other laggard regions? There are four hurdles that an economy must surmount in order to mobilize a new technology. By understanding these hurdles, we can understand many of the mysteries of economic development, including the highly varying performance of different regions. Indeed, by recognizing and responding to the four hurdles, governments can adopt strategies to accelerate their nation's economic growth and the ability to tap into global advances in technology. Saving and investment. Most new technologies are embodied in specific kinds of machinery, such as a new computer or mobile phone, or in specific skills, such as medical training. In other words, even when the ideas behind a technology are available for the whole world, the use of the technology requires investment in physical capital, machines, and human capital, skills. Investment, in turn, requires savings. In order to invest in a machine or in training for new skills, some part of current income must be set aside to pay for the capital good rather than spent on current consumption. Every dollar of investment must be financed by a dollar of saving. If the economy is too poor to save, for example, it may be impossible to finance the uptake of the technology. Exports and imports. Most of the time, the new technology is imported from abroad, where it was first developed. Suppose that the Brazilian government or a private Brazilian company wants to order a capital good made in the United States. It must have the dollars to pay for the import. Those dollars are earned by Brazilian exports. Thus, for a country to be able to import technologies from abroad, it must be a successful exporter of products as well. If a country can't develop export markets, it will find itself cut off from the advance of technologies as well.